everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report, where I'm doing last second tech adjustments to my setup because I had a very slick setup of audio, wireless headphones. It was gonna be so great. Turns out you have to charge them. And so they started to die immediately beforehand. But you know what? We're gonna push through. And you know why we're gonna push through? Not only because we have an awesome day of news to go through, but we also have an awesome co-host who's gonna be joining us for the run of the show. Joining us once again, the publisher and co-owner of the Rouge Collection and film producer, Gary Chambers. Welcome back to The Damage Report.
What's up, brother? It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. And we've got, like I alluded to, we've got a big show, a lot to talk about. We're gonna be talking about the pandemic, climate change. We've got, you know, police brutality. We've got the increasing radicalization with no consequences whatsoever of elected officials. So a lot of big stories we're gonna be getting to. It's been a bit since we last spoke. How have you been weathering all the chaos?
You know, we just keep pushing every day. It is 2020, as we said right before we came on. So, you know, you just roll with the punches and keep pushing.
Yeah, 100%. We're down to less than 2 months before the election. We're only, I think, a couple of weeks away from the first debate. You know, based on what you've been seeing, how are you feeling in terms of anticipation for that debate, the stakes and all of that?
You know, I'm hopeful that Joe Biden at some point is going to, you know, really come swinging, because Trump has momentum on his side. And I think that something's got to stymie that. And hopefully when you put them in a debate with each other, that there's the ability to see the clear difference between the two candidates.
Yeah, I hope so. I honestly, I have no idea what to expect. I mean, there's like a 50-50 chance that Trump is gonna come out wearing like a Q tie or something, or like publicly call Joe Biden a pedophile. Like, I don't know that any candidate, let alone the moderator or the viewers, can really be prepared for and respond to in real time how crazy this thing could become. But anyway, that's 2020, a lot of crazy stuff. And we're gonna be jumping into some of that very soon. For everyone who is already here, whether you're watching on Twitch or YouTube or literally anywhere, there's probably something akin to a like button, maybe a heart, maybe a bell. Start ringing things, start pressing things, let people know that we're active and they can come and join the conversation. And as you tweet to us and Twitch to us and send us comments and super chats, Gary and I are gonna be responding to those as we go. But with that, Gary, why don't we jump into this first story? Lots to get to. Footage from a late August anti-mask, anti-lockdown protest has been going around in the last 24 hours. And we're gonna take a look at it. And I think you're gonna know pretty quickly why this has gone viral. Let's watch.
Now, hundreds have gathered here in front of the Washington County Administration building, calling for the end of a mask mandate, saying they are tired of not living their normal lives. A passionate call for action Friday morning in St. George, several police officers on standby, as many locals called concerns about coronavirus spikes overblown.
The flu kills more than coronavirus.
Others calling the virus a hoax or stating that asymptomatic carriers simply do not exist and they cannot be forced to wear masks anywhere as citizens of the United States.
If we want to wear a mask, that's fine. We can take care of ourselves.
Some rally attendees say they shouldn't ever wear masks if they have any medical issues or mental health concerns, or if they feel they simply can't breathe.
When George Floyd was saying, "I can't breathe," and then he died, and now we're wearing a mask and we say, "I can't breathe," but we're being forced to wear it anyway.
But many stated that they believe in all cases, masks jeopardize kids' health. Parents are demanding they have the right to decide what to do with their children.
I'll tell you another reason I'd hate masks. Most child molesters love them.
School administrators responding that they don't understand why crowds are protesting them based on a mandate given by the governor.
They blocked off the front entrance to the school building, and we went out to ask them to move, and they attempted to storm the school building.
The school board is implementing the governor's recent order that face shields alone are not enough. And if a parent is adamant that their child cannot wear a mask or a shield, they must fill out a form, including a doctor's note, so the district can review it. In St. George, Katie Krallis, ABC 4 News.
Okay, so that was a rally in St. George, Utah, back on August 21st. Reputable sources estimate that up to 1,000 people were present. I can't say, you know, what percentage there were part of what you saw in the video and what were protesting against it. But Gary, there's a lot to dig into with pretty much every second of that video. What did you think?
So I'm gonna start with the fact of the little kid, right? Like that they are poisoning the children with this ignorance. That's first of all. And then the lady at the end with the child molester comment. I'm pretty sure that most child molesters aren't wearing masks. And that is problematic that this woman believes that people in creepy masks are the only people that can be pedophiles, right? And it speaks to the level of ignorance that exists within this country, the propaganda that is spewed out here, and the lady with the George Floyd comment, right? Here you have a man who was, I'm glad she said it though, because when you look at the way that some people compare where they are and their civil rights or their rights being infringed upon versus a man who was literally killed by the government, and here the government is attempting to save your life by telling you to put on a mask, and this woman is, you know, comparing her life to George Floyd's life. Well, the reality is she would never have ended up like George Floyd, and we know it. And her liberties are not being trampled on because she's walking around with no mask on in front of a government building.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, great points on all those individuals. It's difficult for me to say exactly which one bothered me the most. It's like, it's really like a fruit salad of awful. It's like, you know, depending on what you last tasted, then the next thing's gonna hit you the hardest. What's that?
It's all trash.
I do think though that the George Floyd thing, that might be the worst, because she not only said that, she said that on TV, like to a camera. She thought, I've got this comparison that's gonna make me seem like this great, awesome, patriotic person.
And she believed it.
Yeah, no, you there wasn't a knee on your neck for 9 minutes and you didn't die, okay? It's a little bit hot. I sweat a little bit, maybe. That's it. I've been wearing masks for literally months and I haven't died once during that time. You can totally do it. And there's a lot that's been really frustrating me about America for a long time, but especially this year. But the elevation of, I don't have the proper word, my vocabulary isn't large enough, but insane weakness held up as the greatest possible virtue. Like to say, I won't do the bare minimum, the tiniest little thing to protect not only myself, but to protect others, to make sure that elderly people don't die needlessly and all of that. I can't take even a bit of cloth over my face, and that makes me the best possible American. All of you who are, you know, fulfilling the social contract, being responsible, caring about your neighbors, you know, all of those like stereotypical religious values that everyone at that protest says that they believe, you're all sheep. No, to be a good patriotic American, you have to walk around coughing on people. That's the only way. And so, yeah, the other ones bothered me, but her. How bad do some people want to be victims? That you would not only say putting a mask on me is anti-constitutional or something, but forget all that Black Lives Matter stuff. This is the serious injustice, is that I have to have cloth like this. That's the struggle of our times.
It really speaks to how wonderful the world really is for people like her.
It must be.
It must be,
and I think about protests, like what if protesters got everything they wanted? How different would the world be? So like you look at like, you know, a whole bunch of young people protesting against climate change. Like if we gave them what we wanted, then the world would be the climate would be a little bit less hostile to human life. You know, our farming would be a little bit simpler. You'd have less like country wars, all of that. What do they get if they get everything? They just continue spreading the virus to each other. Like it's so pathetic, and it's become so popular, and they just clap each other on the back the whole time. Yeah. Okay. So the kid, I'm not gonna get that mad at a kid. The kid's just saying what he was told. I hate whatever adult told that kid that stupid line about the flu. Not in March when it was dumb, but now. when this was a couple of weeks ago, we'd already lost like 4 to 6 flus worth at that point. And the kid is still saying it because that's what he's surrounded by. Kids just say what adults tell him. And that kid has been ruined, at least in terms of public health.
But that speaks to like all of the things, the ills of our society, right? That they are passed down from generation to generation of people who are passing on garbage logic, garbage science onto their children. And then these children go to school and then they share that same information. And then we create a community of people who believe that foolishness, right?
Yeah.
And so if we wonder how we got here, you know, when people complain about the youth, I always say, well, who raised them? Mm-hmm. Right. I got that from my homeboy, Ryan Thompson. He's always saying, you know, when somebody brings up the kids, he says, well, who raised them? Who raised that kid? Who's his mama? Who's his daddy? Because they're the one we need to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 100% right. And, you know, okay, so we could extend that. Who raised those adults? Well, maybe that old woman that's talking about child molesters wearing masks. Like Jeffrey Epstein didn't have to wear a mask. Like, and the final person, like I'm trying not to, I've just been so beaten down by this year that when I see things like that, I try not to individually be enraged and target it at the individual because it's really, they're emblematic. Every one of those things that you heard is not about that individual. The George Floyd woman, the flu kid, the pedophile older woman, every one of those, there's a million others like them. What I'm also frustrated about though, is that, and I apologize, I couldn't find the full hour of that show that that report was embedded in from ABC4, but at least in that block, they just presented all of that. Like the kid said the flu thing, the woman said the George Floyd thing, and then back to you in the studio. And now let's get an update about traffic on the 405. Like, you can't just do that. Those were lies, bizarre manipulations. There was a bit of QAnon in there that's not even being acknowledged. Like, how are you just going to amplify all of that to your local news audience and then move on with the weather? That seems really irresponsible.
I think that's where we are as a society though, that we have come to a place where people don't care about facts. They don't care if they set the record straight. And there was a time journalism was about, hey, no, somebody's misspoke here. We know what you heard there was said, but there's a counter argument, right? Where is the counter argument? And where's the science? Because it doesn't matter about our discomfort. It doesn't matter how annoyed we are about wearing masks. It's about, does this work? Canada had a day with no deaths yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And America had over 1,000 people die. And so clearly we're not doing something right here as a country and other countries are. And so when Donald Trump and his flunkies say, make America great again, in what regard? In what regard? Because we are failing to beat this virus and we're failing to do it because of a lack of leadership and a lack of just social responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more make America empty again, one person at a time unnecessarily. Yeah, Canada had zero deaths. New Zealand once again had zero cases. All of this is possible. The issue is that we live in a country, and I guess to some extent it was always like this. It feels worse in the time of, you know, social media and everything. But like, I feel like Batman, but like my utility belt is just filled up with hopefully facts and all of those, like everybody is immune to those now. Like if you were to go to those people in that protest and tell them, oh, by the way, Canada didn't have any deaths, maybe they're doing something right that we could learn from. They would say, no, Canada's just lying. Or did you know that only 20 people have died of COVID? I heard that the CDC said that. Like they've cloaked themselves in this armor of convenient falsehoods that it's better to believe those things. Why am I going to look at these tracking numbers of COVID deaths every day? That makes me uncomfortable. I don't like that. I like the idea that almost nobody has died of COVID. And so I'll just hug that. I don't know. And so it makes the job like, you know, you out there as an activist, we're doing this show. Like, how do we get through to people when everyone has been trained to just run as fast as you can from a fact that makes you even momentarily uncomfortable?
I think we just keep preaching the truth, whatever the truth is, and be unapologetic about it the same way they are unapologetic about taking their positions that make no sense. And the one thing we have on our side is science, right? And we also know that regardless of what 2020 remains to be, that in the end, we're going to be on the right side of history. They're going to look back at these people the same way they do at people who were protesting against integration, right? They're going to say, you were one of those people, right? One of those people who wanted to harm more people. People are going to look back at those people and say, I can't believe you were one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'll do a version of what I did on the show yesterday. You know, I devote 35 seconds or so to speaking directly to Trump supporters. And I will say, like, I'm trying to get through to you that you've chosen this guy as your cult leader, your God Emperor, and he doesn't care if you live or die. So back in early April, so around April 10th or so, let's see, we have Trump tweeted that the virus will soon be in full retreat. Okay. 3 days later, speaking with Bob Woodward, he said, this thing is a killer if it gets you, it rips through people, and talked about how easy it is to spread. So that's 3 days after saying it's gonna be in full retreat. And then a few days after the Bob Woodward thing, you remember all of those liberate Minnesota, liberate Michigan, liberate Virginia tweets. That was a few days after he told Bob Woodward, this thing is a killer, it's the plague, it'll rip through you. He started telling all of his followers to have protests like what you just saw. And even though he knew and was talking about how deadly it was and how quickly it spreads, he told all of them, get out there and tell your governor to reopen. Not because it was best for those individuals, but because he thought it was best for him politically, that it would somehow benefit his reelection. And many people have died. We can't necessarily say exactly who. These are big populations, but people have definitely died because of that. And they were probably disproportionately Trump supporters. So if you're still a MAGA head, maybe consider some of these timelines. Your dude doesn't care if you live or die during this thing.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump very briefly touched down in California to pretend that he cared about the wildfires. But we're gonna show you some video of the little summit he had with some California state politicians, as well as Wade Crowfoot, California's natural resources secretary, who did his best to get through to Donald Trump that the solution to California's wildfires is not exclusively raking the forests. And this is how Donald Trump responded to it.
And we're seeing this warming trend make our summers warmer, but also our winters warmer as well. So I think one area of mutual agreement and priority is vegetation management. But I think we want to work with you to really recognize the changing climate and what it means to our forests and actually work together with that science. That science is going to be key, because if we ignore that science and sort of put our head in the sand and think it's all about vegetation management, we're not going to succeed together protecting Californians.
Okay, it'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually. Tom, please.
Science doesn't know anything. Science is a philosophy. It's a framework to getting closer to the truth. It's the best that we've ever had as a species. It does not always lead us in the right direction. It's fallible because it's led by humans who are fundamentally and fairly obviously fallible in a number of different ways. But that's the best bet we have. And Gary, imagine being in that room, being, you know, like a governor of a state that's on fire where, you know, dozens of people have died, or being one of the scientists in the room, desperately trying to get through to this guy that thinks that rakes are all they're needed. And to have him just say, I don't think science knows. I don't care, whatever. It'll cool down. It'll cool down eventually. You know what? It's on fire now. It'll cool down. There's a reason I'm not in that room, because I think I would have rushed him and jumped over that table and body tackled him out of his chair, because I can't take it. I just can't take it.
And the Secret Service would have dealt with you quite swiftly.
Probably.
I'm sure most people would like, no, I'm not going to say most people, there are many people who would like to jump across the table on Trump. I think the real question to us in this moment is, you know, how far are we going to let this go? Right? Are we going to let this guy continue to just take us into the abyss, to this dark cloud that is his mind, rather than just say, you know what? Sometimes, guy, you go too far, right? And the minute you begin to say, I don't think science knows. No, we know you don't know. Mm-hmm. We know you don't know, and we should not listen to you when it comes to talking about the climate or much of anything. If we're honest, you know, the guy doesn't read the briefings that he gets. He spews out whatever he wants to say on a hope. This is the guy who said, well, maybe bleach, right?
Yeah.
That inject UV rays from the sun into our bloodstream or something. This is that guy, right? And to believe that there are still millions of Americans, right, who are saying, that's the guy I want to follow. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand it. Like, my mind cannot comprehend that level of stupidity, right? There's not a tax incentive in the world that's worth following a jackass.
I don't know. Some of these people are really rich, and they seem to be doing pretty well. But he doesn't know. Nobody, like, to be in that room and looking at that guy and thinking, I have to praise him or stroke his ego, whatever I can do to get him to just accept a little bit of the science, because he doesn't know anything. He will never, ever learn anything. He'll never read anything. He tweeted today, or I think he said it on Fox and Friends, he said that I read Bob Woodward's book real fast. I didn't like it. Who thinks he read it? Honestly.
The guy did not.
No, and by the way, I didn't either, but I'm not claiming that I did on Twitter. Like, what Trump supporter thinks, yeah, he woke up, he had a banana, and then he sat down and he flipped through the book reading it. Nobody thinks that. And you don't follow Donald Trump because you think he reads. You're just fine with lying because you've given up on the truth. And that's, it's one of the times that, like, are the words that we have in the English language are sort of too vague sometimes. Because, for instance, I believe that the climate is changing. Okay, so that word believe means a variety of things. I have myself done research. I have been exposed to the research of a wide variety of people who've made it their life's work to learn as much as possible. I've literally traveled to the Arctic with climate change scientists, gone off on a boat to do their experiments in the ocean near the North Pole. Like, believe means a lot of things. When one of his followers says, I don't believe it's happening, what does believe mean in that context? Is it the result of research, of difficult critical thinking, of exposing yourself to a lot of, no, it just means, I don't care. Like, I like that Trump is telling off those Democrats and those scientists. And indeed, if you look at some of the replies of videos of that exchange, his followers loved him saying science doesn't know. Talking about him telling off the lab coats and things like that, how it's been a long time coming because scientists are the new priests of the left's religion and things like that. It's not that they believe other facts, that we've come to different conclusions. They don't care about coming to conclusions, and they certainly don't care about facts. And again, it leaves me feeling sort of powerless to do anything. Like, and the consequences are so high.
Talk to the people in Southwest Louisiana who just dealt with Hurricane Laura.
Yeah.
Had two hurricanes in the same week in the Gulf for the first time in history, right? We just had Sally that's touching ground today somewhere between Mississippi and Louisiana. When you talk about the three or four other storms that are out there in the Atlantic Ocean that are barreling towards America right now in September, right? I have lived in Louisiana almost all of my life and the other 5 years in Florida. So I've lived my entire existence in hurricane country. And what I can tell you is that we're getting more of them. They're getting stronger, they're faster, and they're more damaging than ever before. And when you talk to the people in Southwest Louisiana, where they still don't have power weeks after the storm, when you talk to the people who've lost their homes, that they don't know how they're gonna recover. In Baton Rouge, we had the great flood in 2016, where over 60% of our community flooded that had to recover, right? Those are federal dollars that go to aid to help these families recover. But if we were smart and we took climate change serious, we would do the hard work of doing the work to reduce our climate so that we didn't have to rebuild homes and families all over this country because we have irresponsible leadership. And Donald Trump is just the tip of the iceberg because the Republican Party, Mitch McConnell and his cronies, right, are not pushing the science and saying, you know what, regardless of what this guy does, we're gonna build policy that's smart for the American people. We're gonna do the things that are in the best interest of our children and our grandchildren so that they have a planet to have to inherit it rather than one that's on fire or underwater.
Yeah, and look, pretty much any Republican is gonna agree wholeheartedly with Trump on all these issues. The issue too, though, is that not enough Democrats are like they will acknowledge these things, I guess, but will they do what's necessary to stop them? Generally not. Like I'm in California, you know, my governor, you know, is saying like he's tweeting photos of the fires and the fact that, you know, we look like we're on Mars. Is he banning fracking though? Like is he actually doing what he could do or even advocating for it? I'm not saying he could unilaterally do it, but lots of Democrats unfortunately still aren't taking it as they think they're taking it more seriously. I think, but not nearly enough. And I'm glad that you brought up the hurricanes because, you know, we got the fires. That's certainly one consequence. But I want to run people through just a little bit of the recent climate change related events. So we're gonna jump ahead, Brandon. One graphic. We've got a new comprehensive study published just this week, which relied on an analysis of tens of millions of years of atmospheric records trapped in layers of the Earth's subsurface, found that the world is currently on track to hit a warming threshold that is not witnessed in more than 34 million years, which I think takes us back about halfway to the T-Rex, just to put it in perspective. For only the second time in recorded history, five tropical cyclones are spinning across the Atlantic at the same time, including Hurricane Sally that Gary mentioned, making landfall now. Hurricane Paulette continuing to batter Bermuda, while Tropical Storm Teddy threatens to become a hurricane later this week. I love acknowledging these records like the second time ever, only because they change so much. You're never gonna run out of these records being broken. For instance, the Northern Hemisphere just had its hottest ever summer, breaking the record set last year. I can't wait until next summer when we get to say the exact same thing. That'll be fun, won't it? And an enormous chunk of Greenland's ice cap has broken off in the far northeastern Arctic, a development that scientists say is evidence of rapid climate change. But don't worry, it was only 110 square kilometers. And it would be obviously cheaper to take this seriously than to pay for all of the damage. How many times is Louisiana going to be battered by storms over the next 50 years? What is going to happen to Florida? Think of decades of fires in California. Think about the damage that'll be done to our ability to do farming as more and more of the interior of our country turns into a big pile of dust. It would be so much not only more responsible, more moral, wiser, but economically a far better idea. And unfortunately, they seem to be making the calculation that, well, you know, if Louisiana gets hit, we don't even really have to help them rebuild, you know? Like Puerto Rico, where was the aid for that? It took a huge amount of public outcry for a minimal amount of aid to go to them. And so I guess they feel like they could save a lot of money because a lot of the people being hit by these sorts of things aren't necessarily people that they feel like they're gonna get votes from anyway.
Well, in Louisiana, Southwest Louisiana went for Trump. And so I think they should ask. That was the question, you know, is the president, does he have your best interest at heart? And showing up and telling people that he'll sell you, that you can sell this, his signature, isn't having your best interest at heart, because that's not gonna fix your house. $10,000, even if a Trump signature was worth $10,000, it's not enough to do the repairs on a house that's damaged by a hurricane to the sum of $70,000-$80,000, and not to mention people who've lost almost everything in their homes a lot of times.
So what, I mean, have you talked to any of these people? Like, as it's getting worse year by year, the storms keep coming. Do they accept that something is happening, or do they just think that there's always been hurricanes?
I think that is the logic, you know. We've had storms before. It's not that big a deal, you know. That's the cost of living in Louisiana, you know. No, the storms are worse. They've gotten progressively worse over the years. And when you look at, you know, two in the Gulf at the same time, when you're preparing on both sides of the state, normally when a hurricane is coming, you know, there's a portion of the state that gets to go to another area of the state or to another state around. But when you've got storms coming in both directions, that the entire state, Louisiana is not a massive state, okay? You know, two storms probably potentially covered the entire state. And when you talk about the potential of that type of damage to a state that's number 50 in the nation, right? Recovery doesn't happen easy here. And we discovered that from Katrina and Rita, right? Which hit West Louisiana in around the same time. We have to learn these lessons, but more importantly, we've got to look at the data. In God we trust, everybody else bring data. Republicans love to say that they're Bible thumpers. Well, trust God, but everybody else bring the data, right? And the data says that this is a problem.
Yeah. It's gonna be an exciting next 50 years or so. Assuming we make it. And oh, by the way, also all of those, like, you know, people having to flee to another part of the state in a time of a massive deadly pandemic, obviously a lot more difficult to achieve. Like, imagine if you had to have, you know, interstate, like people fleeing to Texas or something like that. Like, I hope that other states allow, you know, people to flood in from other cities. Will they? Who knows?
Wait. Lafayette, Louisiana, which is, you know, an hour away from Lake Charles, did not let people open a shelter in Lafayette. You don't even have to go to Texas. You can go to other cities in the state where the mayor would say no, right? Jeez. Republican Josh Guillory would not let the residents of Lafayette, of Lake Charles, open a shelter there in his city.
God.
He's a Trump supporter, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Shock.
Wouldn't take care of his neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. If only there was a book that laid out all of these moral truths that we should base our life around. It's convenient to read part of it, not the rest. Yeah, exactly. Oh God, I take any other book. Base your life off of 50 Shades of Grey before Facebook. GOP politician Clay Higgins had a couple of posts on Facebook not long ago that made clear what he thought about protests going on around the country and what he thought should happen to those protesters. Take a look at part of this. It was eventually taken down, and I'm not gonna read the entire thing because it's a lot. But he says, let's see, an armed presence is a real threat. One-way ticket, fellas. Have your affairs in order. All of these just being threats to the protesters there, saying he wouldn't even spill his beer as he drops any 10 of them. So for some reason, he is drinking as he's gunning down protesters. This is really a fantasy that he is crafting for us here. He says, we don't care if you're left or right. I sort of dispute whether he doesn't care about that. But he says, if you show up like this, and he posted some pictures of people with guns saying, we recognize a threat, you won't walk away. He says, let's see, this is where your journey will end. Fast, how fast? 1450 FPS fast. And so, look, he obviously has a problem with the protests, and he is now repeatedly saying, and again, this is an elected Republican representative, saying multiple times that if protesters even have guns, he believes he's justified in gunning them down. Gary, what do you think about this?
So I'm gonna give you full context to Clay Higgins and his foolishness, right? So at Trayford Pellerin, a 31-year-old black man was killed by the police in Lafayette, Louisiana on August 21st. And as a result, there have been protests in the Acadiana area of Louisiana, which Clay Higgins represents. Yeah. Clay is a former sheriff's deputy in St. Landry Parish. People don't talk about the fact that Clay was actually removed from the sheriff's department and lost his commission and was given a commission by the attorney general of the Louisiana, Jeff Landry, so that he could be a commissioned officer still, right? But Higgins is upset because black people in an area of Louisiana are rising up that don't typically rise up. And so he didn't just post a picture of people with guns, he posted a picture of black people with guns.
Yes.
Because Clay Higgins has no issue with the Second Amendment. As a matter of fact, if we started to have a conversation about the Second Amendment and restricting certain magazines, I'm sure Clay Higgins would say we were infringing upon his rights. But black people with guns walking through an open carry state is a problem for Clay. And it's only a problem because they're black and because they're demanding equal treatment under the law, which Clay probably did not give people while he was a sheriff's deputy. The bigger question I have is, what is Nancy Pelosi going to do? You are the Speaker of the House and you have a sitting member of Congress who has threatened to kill United States citizens. He should be censured.
Yep.
Period. In my opinion, that whatever process to eject him is what should be taking place, because you have a sitting member of Congress who has threatened the lives of the citizens he represents. He said he'd do it with his beard. He said he laid down 10 of them. As if, and mind you, on the same day, there were Trump supporters, people in Trump gear with guns that showed up to the protests in Lafayette, where black people showed up with signs, right? Signs. And when there was a fire in Lafayette, Louisiana, it was set by white people, right? Like they were caught on video doing it. And so for Higgins to post a picture of black people with guns as if we don't have these constitutional rights, or if we're criminalized because we have a weapon, in this America, black people better have weapons in order to make sure that they can defend themselves against people like Clay Higgins, right?
Yeah.
Because this man is plotting. This is a plot. And the sad part is, when you have a government official saying these things, he's putting that into the atmosphere where somebody like a Kyle Rittenhouse, right, can go carry out his mission, because he doesn't have the courage to do it himself, if we're honest. Clay's just talking smack on Facebook because he thinks it's gonna get him some traction rather than this whooping he's getting right now. The truth is, he's trying to speak to a demographic of people to rile them up, to create these phony militias that aren't needed, right? To go out there and bear arms and then bring harm to other citizens because they believe that our fight for justice is not one that we should be fighting. That's what this is really about. Clay Higgins is a racist bigot in Congress, and Nancy Pelosi should do something about him. And if she doesn't, then she doesn't deserve to sit in the seat of Speaker of the House.
Exactly. And it's been more than 2 weeks. So it's looking like she's not going to.
She knows. Like you can't that you don't know that this happened and it's not an issue, right? This should be, this video has gone on multiple news networks. People have talked about it all over the country. And the question is, Nancy, why won't you do your job, sis?
Yep. So look, the only thing that differentiates this from what some, you know, racist sheriff would have posted on a 1960s equivalent of Facebook is that he pretends we don't care what color you are, we don't care if you're left or right, when it could not be more obvious that that is the entirety of this. How many of these anti-lockdown protests have had white guys strapped with AK-47s? Has he posted on Facebook about how he's gonna gun them down and he's gonna spill his Bud Light while he does it? No, he was never worked up to do that for some reason. Even though, look, as you pointed out, it's totally their right. Louisiana is an open carry state, meaning a permit is not required for someone to visibly carry a firearm in public. Personally, I think that's crazy. I don't want people walking around in assault rifles, regardless of their political background, race, anything. But that's the law. That's the law people like Clay Higgins want. So why all of a sudden is it a problem? If those people are doing what you repeatedly say is like the most patriotic thing you can do, which is to bear arms. I mean, the First Amendment, we're forgetting about that. Everyone just move past that. It's not patriotic. It's probably not even constitutional. Second Amendment, that's where it's really out. That's where patriotism is at. So then are they not being patriots? And by the way, in terms of like the implicit threat, like I am racking my brain to think of cases where black individuals with assault rifles have shot up places. But now if I were to think of white individuals with assault rifles, we could talk for hours about all of those. Like and obviously they have to pretend that that's not the case, that we don't have people like Kyle Rittenhouse grabbing guns like that and going to protests and already gunning people down. It's not a hypothetical, as you pointed out. It's already happened. It's only going to become more common, and it's not the first shooting at these protests. Multiple right wingers and Boogaloo Boys and militia members and all of that have killed protesters, have killed cops at these. But again, those protesters, those are the true threat. That's what Clay Higgins is worried about, and he's willing to just talk openly about killing them. Because one, he's not worried about being censured. And two, he knows his audience desperately wants that. They want Republican politicians that will talk about killing these people in the same way that they want hosts like Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity to talk about how lethal force is needed against them. You had a Republican senator early on saying there should be no quarter given to protesters, that they should just be gunned down, not arrested. Has he gotten in trouble? No, he hasn't gotten in trouble. And so, like the ACLU in Louisiana is calling for him to be censured. You're right to do so with Nancy Pelosi. But it just seems like anything goes. That like their base is bloodthirsty. And they're now like clout chasing now is by talking about who you want to kill. That's how you get support as a right winger. That's how you know, possibly win re-election, is talking about all the people that you think no longer have a right to life. And really fast, in response to protests about the callous indifference to their lives. Like they say that those protests aren't valid. They're not justified, while proving it in every one of their like every time they talk about it, they prove how needed it is.
If Clay Higgins wanted to do something to help the people of Louisiana, to help the people of Acadiana, he'd help lift the restraining order that the police union has filed to hold the body cam footage of Trayford Pellerin being killed by the police there, right? They said Trayford was potentially a threat to the people in the store. The cops shot inside the building, John. Their bullets went inside the building through a glass, through the drawer where the cashier would give out the stuff in a night drop box, right? Cops did that. And if Clay Higgins wondered why people are in the streets, it's because you have police officers gunning down black people in the city that he represents. And if he was about the job that the people elected him to do, he'd be concerned about justice instead of carrying out another injustice in America.
Exactly. And by the way, as I alluded to earlier, that initial post was taken down for, you know, involving violent threats and things like that. You know, Facebook is pretty hesitant to do that, but they did it. So he put up another post reassuring his followers that he hadn't taken it down, that the platform had, because the cool thing about being a right winger is you can talk about how we need to murder people in the streets. And then if the platform does its job and takes that down, then you get to say, look at me, I'm being censored. Aren't I the victim here? And the right wing loves that. They love vigilante justice and they love being a victim. And he put up another post, this time with a bald eagle, and tells people, I'll advise when it's time to gear up, mount up, and roll out, which seems like the only way you can take that is I'll tell people when they need to grab their guns and start shooting people. That was also taken down, again, probably proving in the minds of his followers how censored he is and how much of a victim he is, and how liberal left wing social media networks are trying to suppress free speech. While he's talking about killing protesters. Free speech doesn't mean anything anymore, except what the right wing wants it to.
He sounds like a domestic terrorist to me.
Yeah, and at the very least, definitely trying to inspire them. One Kyle Rittenhouse isn't enough for some people.
Indeed.
Okay, let's jump immediately into our next story. The news, a bit dark these days, a little bit, but we're gonna proceed. An incredibly brave whistleblower named Don Wooten has been talking about the conditions at the Erwin County Detention Center in Georgia, talking about how ICE has been callously indifferent to the COVID spreading in this facility, as well as a number of additional almost like out of, like the treatment of these individuals that are being detained here is like out of a horror movie. So we're gonna walk you through some of this. So Dawn Wooten says that her own health was imperiled while working at Irwin during the outbreak. She has sickle cell anemia, and although she told her supervisors her doctor had warned her that exposure to the coronavirus could be deadly, management at Irwin neglected to tell her that detainees she had contact with were symptomatic, and in three cases had tested positive for COVID-19. So they knew that these people could spread it. They knew that she had one of those comorbidities that makes it more likely that you'll die, but they didn't care to protect her life. Now, I can't say that for sure this is because this is a private detention center run by LaSalle Corrections, but they do have a record of caring far less about human life than others. Now, how widespread is the pandemic there? According to ICE, 31 people detained at Irwin have tested positive for COVID-19 since the pandemic began. But the whistleblower suspects that there were most likely at least 50 by early July when she was demoted, based on the number of detainees she personally knew who had tested positive and what she'd heard from colleagues. And by the way, that virus also spread among staff. According to Wooten, more than 15 LaSalle employees she knows personally have been infected with COVID-19. She provided the names of at least a dozen staff members, including both correctional staff and healthcare workers who tested positive. And the situation was so dire that detainees had to begin to make their own masks out of whatever material they could actually track down. LaSalle offered the masks by late April. So, you know, after 6 or 7 weeks of the nationwide lockdown, provided not by the company, but donated by a local church group. But one detainee said the masks have not been replaced unless a family member pushes ICE and LaSalle for a new one. So they waited almost 2 months. They gave them a mask after the pandemic had already rampaged through the detainees at this facility. And that is possibly not even the scariest information that this whistleblower revealed to us, Gary.
You know, it is clear, and I can't understand why Trump's numbers with the Hispanic population are where they are because of his treatment of their people, right? That what he allows to be done in these detention centers, what he's done at the border, how he's handled immigrant populations of people is so disrespectful. It's immoral. It's inhumane. And you know, but it's Trump, right? It is him. It is him in his fullness. And it is America in its fullness. It is not new for America to mistreat people that they see as less than. It is not new for America to allow people to sit in prisons or in cages in filth or in where they don't have health, proper health care, right? And the truth is, it is the government's job, once you detain someone, to take care of their health and welfare while you're detaining them, because you have detained them, right? You have taken them out of the ability to care for themselves and place them into your detention. And so while they are in your detention, it does not mean that they should be treated less than human. It does not mean that because you feel they broke a law or whatever it is, that they are somehow subjected to mistreatment by officers or not being provided the simple humanity of a mask, right? If Trump's around here saying, oh, we're gonna beat this thing and we've got all of the supplies that we need, right? America has more than enough masks, and we've got ventilators that we can lend ventilators to other countries and things of that nature now. But you can't even make sure that people who you're detaining in ICE detention centers or prisons have masks, right? The same thing was happening for people who were detained in Mississippi jails, that when the coronavirus happened, those people didn't have masks. And what it says is that they don't value these people's humanity. And yep. The thing that bothers me the most about where we are as a country right now is it makes me question, where is our humanity? Where is, at the very core, forget you know, your politics, forget your ideology, just how we treat people. Human decency is escaping us as a country right now. And it is in large part because we have a commander in chief who does not care about the basic humanity of people, of all people. Regardless of what you have done, nobody deserves to be more exposed to a virus. And guess what? It costs us more money as a country when we then have to provide extended health care to these people once they are sick. Yep. It is cheaper to buy a face mask than it is to care for somebody who has asthma, who then catches the coronavirus and has to be placed on a ventilator.
100%.
And for conservatives who say fiscal responsibility, everything about how Donald Trump and conservatives have handled this pandemic has been fiscally irresponsible. And it is not just costing the American people their lives, it is costing us money that we will never be able to get back. I don't care how much he talks about how strong the economy is. America is in a weak state right now because our humanity is at one of the weakest points that it has been at in decades.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, like politics isn't, if it ever was, it isn't. Should the corporate tax rate be at 35% or 33% or 38%? It's, does this class of people merit any compassion whatsoever? Do these people, do their lives have value? And a significant portion of the country thinks no, they don't. Like, so The Intercept did a great job of publishing what this whistleblower had to say. The whistleblower did great work, and so we will help to spread it. That's our job. And for a very significant portion of the country, they will hear this and think, good, I don't want them to spend money on these masks. I don't want them to receive medical care. They shouldn't have broken the law. They shouldn't have broken the country. If you're in prison, well, they, you know, that's just that's on you. Shouldn't have been in prison. Really, that is the gap, the moral gap in our country, is who merits any concern whatsoever. When a hurricane rampages through X area, do we have to care about that? Well, I'm gonna need to know more about those people. That's what many millions of Americans think. You know, do people in prison, should they be allowed to vote? No, why? Because they won't vote for me. They don't count anymore because they can't give me what I want. That is really what we're up against. And people are losing their lives. And not just the detainees, that's what's so stupid and self-defeating about this. Those conservatives would probably say, well, the guards at one of these facilities, those are good people. I mean, they're law enforcement, right? Yeah, they're getting sick, they're dying as well. Because it turns out when you're forced to work in an area where lots of people are being exposed to a fatal illness, you can't necessarily wall off the employees as well. And that's the experience that we've seen in prison after prison from the very beginning of this pandemic. People did a great job of warning in the early days of this pandemic. Like for instance, in Rikers, that was one of the worst outbreaks. This is going to be a disaster, not hindsight, not looking back and saying this went poorly. They warned about it. And people didn't care to do anything. The people with the power to protect all these lives chose not to. And that is why there have been so many cases, so many deaths, people maimed, and all of that. But as I alluded to, the COVID might not be the most horrific part of this story. So let's proceed to the next section. One of the things revealed by whistleblower Don Wooten about what was going on at Irwin County Detention Center was the apparently just like outbreak of by choice choosing to perform hysterectomies on female detainees. So this is the partial or complete removal of the uterus. The whistleblower said that an offsite doctor supposedly performed the surgeries on women who complained of heavy menstrual cycles, but that many women seemed to not understand what had happened. In many cases, nurses obtained consent from patients by simply Googling Spanish. And again, how little do you have to care about the well-being of an individual to not even bring in a translator to talk to them about the long-term effects of having the surgery? The fact that potentially you will not be able to have children. And indeed, that happened to individuals. And this happened to a number of individuals who didn't ask for it, didn't know what was going to happen, but they were at the mercy of these facilities. And these facilities apparently thought, it'll shut them up. And what do you know? Maybe we stop some of these people from reproducing in the future. That is a story that we have seen played out in America many, many times over its history. The sort of callous disregard for reproductive health and freedom. And we're seeing it not 100 years ago, 50 years ago, but playing out every day at these facilities.
It's terrible.
I know. It's.
It's. We don't just have to stop DACA, right? We'll stop them from even having a child to have the potential of the American dream, right? We will strip you of the ability to have a child potentially, right? So that we don't have to deal with dreamers who are born in America and now we've got to take care of them. So no, we don't want you. You by chance end up in America to have a baby and we have to make them a citizen of this country. No, we don't want that. And so we'll do whatever we can to you while you're in our care. And that is, you know, people have compared Trump to Hitler. And when you think about the things that he does, right? And you compare what happened in that period of our history, there are so many similarities that it is scary. And I can imagine that there were people who were sympathizers with Nazi Germany who were saying, but the same way that people are saying, but no, you don't, they shouldn't be here. And but no, these are human beings who do not deserve to be treated this way. And if you believe that the government should have the right to lay somebody on a table and without their full understanding of what's taking place, commence to have surgery, right, on these women and alter their bodies, and that is acceptable in this century, in this time in America, then you are no different than the people in Nazi Germany. That is my question. You are no different than them. Because there are too many similarities between what Donald Trump and his administration has allowed to take place in this era of our history and what took place in that era of our history. And if we ignore it, shame on us.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we'll do our job of talking about it. But again, it's difficult to shame a person about the thing that caused them to be popular in the first place. Like, I'll ask the audience right now, if Trump came out and gave a speech and said, you know what I've got for you in my second term? Every single immigrant that we detain, we're going to sterilize. What percentage of his support do you think he would lose?
None.
Would he lose 1%?
I don't think he'd lose any.
I don't know.
I live in South Louisiana, brother, and I talk to these people. All right. And there is a belief among some of them. They may not say these things in public because they fear that they lose their jobs or their connectivity, right? And there's some social cost if you say the wrong things at these point that people will cancel you. And there is a benefit to the cancel culture in that regard, right? But they think it. And the reason that Trump is in power is because there are millions of people who agree with his flawed, racist logic. And I do not believe that he would lose support. He has done so much and not lost support. This man said that he could go in Times Square and shoot somebody and his supporters would love him. And he has done so many horrible things as president of the United States and they love him. 50% white Americans are still voting for Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I 190,000 people. Sorry, I apologize for cutting you off there. 190,000 people have died in the pandemic. A lot of them Trump supporters, and that didn't cause. What has he lost all year? Economic collapse, worst year in American history, possibly. What has he lost? Like a point or two, maybe, and he seems to be getting it back. So no, if he announced forced sterilizations for all immigrants, I don't see how he'd lose any support. Like I know there's still some people in terms of like the race thing. It's what if we find that tape from The Apprentice with him using the N-word. And I think, what do you think? What, his followers are gonna leave him when he says that? Like,
do you think that they're not using it too?
Yeah. Like if Tucker Carlson started dropping that on his show, his ratings would go up. Like, I honestly don't know what country some people think that we live in. Fox News spent all year, all pandemic, telling their audience everything they could, every irresponsible thing to maximize the chance they die from this virus. They've been wrong since day one. They're more popular than they were at the beginning of the pandemic. Like, we are surrounded by people, millions of people that are immune from being, from having their opinions changed, even when their lives are at risk. It's not enough. We're surrounded in a very real sense by people who have been trained to be monsters. Some of them might be able to be brought back into the light, but it is a very difficult thing to do. And it is difficult to even come up with something that would be over the line for these people. The forced sterilizations doesn't do it. Just gunning everyone down on the border. I don't know. Would that make him lose 1%? I don't know. It might raise his support in some border states. We're in very dark times. Really fast on the hysterectomies. There was one woman who said that her anesthesia wasn't like dialed in enough, so she was still somewhat conscious while the operation was going on. The guy was, I think this was one where he was actually supposed to remove one of her ovaries. That was the actual intent. He removed the wrong one and said during it, I got the wrong one. So he just removed the other one. And she was left without the ability to bear children, which she had not consented to in any way. The whistleblower described the doctor that they bring in this way, saying everybody he sees has a hysterectomy, just about everybody. That's his specialty. He's the uterus collector. Everybody's uterus cannot be that bad. But that's what they're doing. And who's going to protect these individuals?
So for all the pro-lifers, right? What's the difference in this guy and the people that you hate at the abortion clinic? What's the difference? He's stopping people from having babies. And in this situation, he's doing it without their consent.
Yeah.
Pro-life. The Republican Party's pro-life. Pro-life.
You set up these tests that should be, well, like, come on, you gotta have some shame. Like, if you say that you care about the ability to bear children, then you have to care about this, right? No. You believe that carrying a gun in public is the best thing a person could possibly do. Oh my God, that guy's black, get his gun. Like, these tests are so easy to pass, but they don't care. You can't shame them. No, like, pointing out hypocrisy, I still do it as like, it's like a vestigial organ I have that I feel like I have to do it, but they don't care. It doesn't seem to bother these people.
I think that it is a necessary moment in history, whether as painful as it is, that we are in a necessary moment in history to recognize how much work there is left to do. And without a Donald Trump, without this moment in history, I'm not sure after all of the hope and inspiration of Obama that we would have been able to realize that America still has a long way to go to be a place of liberty and justice for all.
Let's talk about yet another individual who died in police custody under incredibly suspicious and growing more suspicious conditions. This is Ronald Green. So the 49-year-old, the death remains shrouded in secrecy because state police have declined to release body camera footage related to the May 2019 chase north of Monroe, Louisiana. Troopers say it began when Green failed to stop for an unspecified traffic violation. We have a photo of the individual here. His family, as is so often the case, now engaged in a years-long struggle to even find out what actually happened. The family says that authorities initially claimed that he died after crashing into a tree, but omitted what state police now acknowledges was the struggle preceding his death. The lawsuit, drawing on witness accounts, alleges officers pinned him to the ground and used a stun gun on him, even after he apologized for leading them on a chase. Now, Gary, I know that this is a case that you've been talking quite a bit about. So, I mean, in what ways is this similar and different from, you know, the other many individuals who have died in similar circumstances over the past few years?
So, Ronald Green was driving away from police, and he runs off the road. And like you said, they say that he died in a car accident, is what they tell his parents. When they find out, when they examine his body, they find out he was tased 3 times, right? They find out that he was in an altercation. And there's body cam or dash cam footage to this audio as well that has been concealed for over a year, right? And this isn't a local issue. This is the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, who his state police officers did this, right? Same state police that we found out a year or months later that a state trooper used the N-word when referring to another deputy, and that story broke, right? So there's a culture in policing, not just at the local level with city police and sheriff's deputies, but even state troopers here. And what needs to happen is Governor Edwards said in to the AP News yesterday that he had not yet seen the video. Number one, the governor needs to watch the video. Number two, the governor needs to fire the officers who lied in police reports and said something that took place, that things that took place that did not take place, because the medical report just shows that. And there needs to be a full look at where state police is. This footage should be seen by everyone in this state, because it is a problem that we as taxpayers fund these cameras to be on these cars and on these officers so that we can see what happens in critical incidents. And then when these incidents happen, the government holds the tape for a year.
Yep.
And so if what took place is what officers say took place, then show us what's on the video, right? And so John Bell's a Democrat that was elected by a majority black vote in Louisiana. And so he has an obligation, and he's a lawyer. He has an obligation to the law and to the people who put him in office to bring us transparency and justice if these officers indeed murdered Ronald Green, which is what all of these reports show. And so after talking to the attorneys and finding out more about this situation, I'm deeply concerned. And I hope that the governor is, with all speed and diligence, going to give some transparency to the people of Louisiana. Because if we can't trust what's supposed to be the highest policing agency in our state, then we can't trust any of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even if it was resolved tomorrow, it's been a year and a half. Like, I can't imagine what that must have been like for the family. I had a woman on the show a couple of weeks ago who it's been about a year and a half, I think. Her brother was killed by police in Austin. It had been taped by like a reality show that was following the cops around. They only found about that tape like a year later, and the tape had already been destroyed. Of course, this is so often the case. I mean, there's things that happen. Like, we throw around the term common sense. If they have footage of it and they say, no, we didn't do anything wrong, and you say, well, I want to see the footage, and they say no, what reasonable person doesn't think, oh no, there's gotta be something on that video? I mean, or when they turn off the camera, like, a reasonable person has only one reaction to that. That's unacceptable. No, if you're not gonna, okay, you don't have to show us the tape. Okay, you're all fired, you're all under arrest. Like, clearly you've done something that you think we could not see and not have a negative reaction to you. And yet it just goes on. Rahm Emanuel in that tape, was it a year and a half for that tape as well? Like, you don't get to conceal the tapes, you just don't. They're not yours. We pay for that budget. It's not like you guys raised that money. We bought you all that stuff. Those body cameras are on you. We bought them. It's our footage. We get to see what it is. And unfortunately, America has become so placid in regard to its law enforcement, especially the big percentage of law enforcement was set up to protect their interests above all others and to brutalize everyone else, that we don't expect to have any control over that. Yeah, the cops get to do whatever they want. They're probably being honest. They probably have a good reason for concealing this footage of the death of an individual for a year and a half. It's insanity. It's just insanity.
There is no good reason to conceal what takes place on body cam footage. This is a public records issue. We have a right to see what took place. And like you said, we fund these body cameras. And for John Bell, as a Democrat governor, right? Here's the test, brother. You can tell us about Alton Sterling in 2016 and your sympathy when it happened and it was the Baton Rouge police officer. You can give sympathy to the family of Trayford Pellerin in Lafayette when it's the Lafayette Police Department. But these are state troopers under his care. And put into consideration also that John Bel Edwards' father, grandfather, and his brother were sheriffs of Tangipahoa Parish. Wow. So this is, and who understands policing, he comes from a policing family, and we need a governor who is going to defend all of the people, not just the people with badges on.
Yeah, it's it could not be farther from not too much to ask. Like, it's nothing. It should be the bare minimum. The footage should be immediately made available. Immediately.
There should be laws, John, that within 48 hours of a critical incident, that anytime these incidents happen where there's body cam, dash cam, or audio, that within 48 hours, the general public has the ability to see that footage. Because when the government kills a citizen, it should have to answer for what it does when it kills a citizen, because we are paying the officers and we have in essence paid the government to kill us. And that is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it's inconvenient, if you're a police department and you worry that there's gonna be a big protest after the tape comes out, stop killing people.
Hello.
Super simple solution.
It ain't hard. And you have to ask yourself the question, why do we not find so many videos of how they handle white people the same way? Why are we not finding 12-year-old white kids with toy guns like Tamir Rice? Why are we not finding stories where white men are running away and shot in the back? Why are we not finding videos of white men or white women with knees on their necks for 9 or 10 minutes? You know why? They know they can't get away with killing white people like that.
Yeah.
They know that if they kill a white citizen, he or she better had had a weapon and better had been a threat to the officer's lives. And when there is a clear example of someone being a threat to officers' lives, there is not protest. There is no outcry, because this is not an attempt to say we want officers harmed. What we're saying is, after police interactions, we want the officer to go home and we want the citizen to go home. And if the citizen broke a law, we want them to go to jail and allow the court system to deal with them the same way you allow the courts to deal with Dylan Roof after he killed 9 black people at Great Emmanuel Church in Carolina. That's what we want to see happen. We want equal treatment under the law instead of being treated like second-class citizens. And when we've got Democrat governors, and he appointed this head of state police now, John. So this is all on John Bel Edwards. And he has to answer to the people of Louisiana for what's taking place with state police here.
100%. Couldn't agree more. Donald Trump's reelection campaign, from the ads that he's running, the way that he's talking on the campaign trail, the convention that he just had, he has sort of solidified that effort around a few core appeals to his base. And those sorts of appeals, with their fairly obvious connections to violence that's going on against protesters and things about that, things like that, have led many people to talk about fascism in a way that has always sort of been around in American politics, but is seeming more relevant on a daily basis. And so we decided it was a good time to have back on the show the man who literally wrote the book on fascism. The book is How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Joining us once again on the Damage Report is the Jacob Orawski Professor of Philosophy at Yale University. Jason Stanley, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, John.
Glad to have you here. It's been a bit since we last spoke, and the world has absolutely fallen apart during that time. And so I have a feeling that probably plays into a little bit of this as well. But I was curious, when we reached out for you to come back on the show, we had just experienced the convention, and that was a very interesting view into not necessarily what the Republican Party actually thinks is happening in the country, but what they want to focus on. What did you think about those nights of speeches?
Well, I thought that it was a cult of the leader. The Republican platform was devoted simply to Trump. I mean, there wasn't a Republican platform other than Trump, which is a cult of the leader. We saw 4 of the 6 long speeches at the Republican National Convention given by Trumps. So the identity of the Republican Party seems to be taken over just by Trumpism, by the social and political movement of Trumpism. We had peons and odes to the leader throughout. We had this kind of conspiracy theory in Tim Scott's speech. He talked about Manhattan elites and Hollywood moguls being a threat to America. We found which sort of echoes sort of Protocols of Elders of Zion kind of iconography there. We had repeated painting of the Democratic Party, the political opposition at this point, as dangerous Marxists and radicals, which we've seen continue. So the idea is that the options we face are between communism and the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. So this kind of demonization of opponents is very disturbing in a democracy.
Yeah, certainly. Demonization of opponents, of presenting protesters as enemies, certainly. The lines seem to be being drawn very starkly. And so I think that you've mentioned one there, but I'm curious, now that we're very much in campaign mode, previous times when we've talked, it was just during Trump's term. It was him weathering crises and things like that. In his campaign speeches, the way his surrogates are talking about him, are you noticing any new or stronger sort of things you would commonly associate with fascist ideology and those sorts of tropes?
Absolutely. So when my book first came out in 2018, people said, it's not fascism because there's no militias on the street. There's no winking, there's no relationship between the government and militias, armed militias on the street. Now we have open urgings, or open connection, communication between the president and his campaign, it seems, and these militias. He's calling on people, ordinary citizens, to arm themselves and protect the polls. We had the Department of Administration official raised panic about leftists insurgents who are going to be threats to the nation this week. We had the president praising a right wing vigilante who killed two people in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And we had him praising the US Marshals killing of someone who killed a right-wing protester. So we have this praising of violence of vigilantes and militia members who take the president's side, and then a call for harsh administrative and state reprisals against those who stand against him. Obviously, I'm not condoning violence against anyone here, but the government should not be talking about state officials making retribution. That's not something we should hear from our administration. We should not hear the administration urging violence. We have law breaking going on. We have a pandemic happening, and we have breaking rules about social distancing and gatherings. And the Republican National Convention itself was in violation of the Hatch Act. There's kind of he was using the White House for political purposes. So we have this kind of open flaunting of rules, and that open flaunting is because in this kind of ideology, in fascist ideology, the rules are whatever the leader wants. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that more and more. We're seeing the idea, the fascist authority is the leader's authority. And again, we're seeing that. We're seeing all opposition painted as illegitimate. And finally, another objection people made to me was, it's not fascist ideology unless you see the mechanism of democracy itself being challenged. And we're having the mechanism of democracy itself being challenged. The election system is being challenged as rigged and corrupt.
Yeah, there's a lot there that I want to return to. But one other objection that we talked about before we started this interview that possibly flows from that is, it's not fascism if it's just, and one of those is, if it's really just a cult of personality, is this really fascism, or is this Trumpism? I don't know exactly what the distinctions are supposed to be between those, but what do you think about that attempt to explain it?
Yeah, that's a great That's a great point, an important point to respond to. People say fascist ideology is a kind of racial hierarchy, a glorification of the nation, and we lack that kind of grand vision here. This is kind of more of a sort of monarchy dictatorship kind of model if it's authoritarianism we're looking at. But I would push back on that. The cult in fascist ideology, the leader represents the nation. And that we saw time and time again in the Republican National Convention, and we're seeing it again in the campaign. Trump is the nation, Trump is the people. In fascist ideology, the leader is the personification of the nation and the personification of his supporters. And we are seeing that crystallization here. We're seeing all the iconic imagery of the nation superimposed upon Trump, and Trump in turn is supposed to represent the nation. So I don't think when people say this is just about Trump and Trumpism, that it means we're not seeing the culmination of fascist ideology and the threat of an authoritarianism with a fascist cast. Because an authoritarianism with a fascist cast involves a leader who represents the nation and whose claims and whose authorities cannot be overruled by anyone else, the Congress, the courts, past precedent.
Yeah, and he certainly doesn't think that he can be. So just to be clear, so if Trump loses in November, you don't expect that the Republican Party then says, oh, well, that was an interesting time and now we're the party of Bob Dole again. Like, would you expect that the next round of contenders for the Republican nomination are going to be playing into some of the same sorts of tropes that Donald Trump has made core to his presidency?
Absolutely. I think that there are systemic issues here that make us vulnerable to this kind of politics that date back for decades. Newt Gingrich ushered in a kind of war, politics as war, where the opposition party is completely illegitimate. And to some extent, Biden represents a counter to that. But Newt Gingrich had the idea you block the opposing party no matter what, they are illegitimate. That is a kind of politics that is anti-democratic. Arendt warns of the dangers of loyalty to party over parties. And the Republicans have long said, if we can't rule, no one should. So there's that. There's the pain. There's the what Timothy Snyder calls the politics of pain, where either you have health insurance or you don't, and given such a system, such a broken system with health insurance, with jobs, with childcare, there's this winner takes all system, which makes people think that if they have something, it's because others don't, and that will always lead Americans to think that politics is a war over scarce resources. And then of course, there's the ever present drumbeat of police violence against Black Americans and massive structural racial inequality that will divide Americans along racial lines. Poor whites will say, what about our pain? What about our, we're being overlooked in this, or, you know, this is a threat to our safety. And this kind of racial politics will always then feed the flames of a future demagogue.
I want to ask you a question. I'm very curious about your opinion about this, because we have all of what Donald Trump has been saying and doing this year in terms of the pandemic. He's been, in his own words, downplaying it, and his complete failure to respond to it doesn't appear to be hurting him that much. And he says that he wants to do this to calm people down, while at the same time he's trying to convince people that Antifa is about to come take over their homes in suburbia or whatever. And so at the same time, especially during the pandemic, we've had the explosion online of conspiracy theories, with QAnon being the most common one. Is there any connection between those two things, or are they just happening at the same time?
Okay, so one of the most concerning features of our political system is QAnon, and the emergence of conspiracy theories. Donald Trump was a leading birtherist, and now we have QAnon, which I'm not alone among commentators in drawing strong connections between QAnon and the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, the conspiracy theory at the heart of National Socialism. The idea was there's a secret cabal of elites. This secret cabal of elites is trying to bring socialism and communism and destroy the national traditions. They're in cahoots with, as Joseph Goebbels puts it in his speeches, the international underworld. So the idea is, you know, the criminals are together with the communists, and in this case, Muslims are playing to some extent the role Jews used to play as the sort of hidden world enemy. And all of this is coming together in QAnon. And this kind of conspiracy theory is devastating. It undermines all public trust. It undermines any capacity to recognize competing political views as legitimate. So when you think your opponent is hiding pedophilic sex rings, we also have elements here with QAnon of blood libel against the Jews. That, you know, blood libel was the claim that Jews were trying to use the blood of Christian babies. So the idea is we're going to protect the children. We're going to protect the children from this devious, evil threat. It's somehow elites and in cities trying to bring communism and debauchery here. And they're operating through our institutions. And we need a strong leader to crush them. And this vindicates violence. It vindicates vigilante violence. It vindicates militias. It vindicates authoritarian rule. As far as the pandemic, I think that we've seen these would-be authoritarians across the world, Bolsonaro in Brazil, Putin, Modi, and Trump all fare very poorly with this pandemic. And I think they don't know how to react to it. Everything's either a friend or an enemy. And in this case, I think the administration, I worry that the administration is viewing it as something, as sort of something that affects other people, you know, the Democrats voters. At first, they viewed it as a problem with Democrat-led cities and minorities. And now I think it's helping their election strategy, because we see a large lead for Trump among people who want to vote and intend to vote in person, who are not afraid of the pandemic. And so if you exacerbate the pandemic, then those who take it seriously will vote by mail, and those who won't will vote in person. And then what you risk, and then you delegitimize voting by mail, and then you corrupt the election.
Yeah. Yeah, you delegitimize it even if you yourself have done it. Seemingly everyone in your administration has done it. Now, in the last day, some op-ed that he wrote back in the year 2000 was talking about so positively towards mail-in voting. But yeah, we're not going to convince people of that. So looking forward, obviously Trump staying in office seems like an untenable situation. Biden winning is the alternative, but you don't appear to believe that that's going to simply get rid of QAnon or get rid of the fascistic tendencies in the Republican Party. Is there anything that could be done either by Biden, by the media, during that time to try to move in the direction of getting us away from that, to perhaps push the Republican Party in a different direction, to pull some people out of this conspiracy theorizing? Are there any lessons from countries that have transitioned out of fascism?
So I don't think we face fascism in the sense that we still are living in a democracy, but we face the concern that going further down this path will lead to an authoritarianism with a fascist cast. I think that the way Biden is campaigning, clearly recognizing Republicans as legitimate opponents, is something we need for our democracy. I mean, it's no secret that you can see it online that I donated to Bernie Sanders and supported Sanders and Warren. But I think that Biden, by reaching out to his political opponents, is enacting democracy. I also think we need this politics thrives in a moment of fear. People seek a strong leader when they're fearful. when they have great anxiety for their future. And so we face these enormous challenges. Our healthcare system is in tatters. We have massive unemployment. We face very severe, we face catastrophic climate change. The more we can see, all Americans can see that these are challenges that face all of us. Our racial, the racial injustice of the prison system. The more people see that these things make us lean to anti-democratic solutions. Mm-hmm. As Toni Morrison said in 1995, too often the United States looks for fascist solutions to national problems. If we can get people less afraid, feel more secure, then they won't look for these kinds of solutions. They won't feel that, they won't feel the kind of fear that demagogues draw upon in their political campaigns.
Okay. I don't know exactly how to get there, but it is a good target. And hopefully we can figure some things out as we continue this conversation. The book is How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Jason Stanley, as always, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.